B-Pod Studios.
These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
This may feel strong, but you people are stupid.
OMG. It's Felger and Maz, 95 The Sports Hub.
You'll hear the call tonight on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Mention the pressure on Bruce Cassidy. He'll have it. He will have lost three of four playoff series if they lose tonight. That's not going to feel good. That ain't going to taste good. Mike Babcock, though, whole nother situation up in Toronto. And I'll read to you here from the Toronto Star. I believe this is the Toronto Star. Dave Reshook wrote this. Headline, Stubborn Babcock Passes on Change with Leafs Special Teams Falling Short. Babcock's getting a lot of grief for their horrendous penalty kill up there in Toronto. And I'm going to give you some numbers on that here in a minute that will just absolutely blow you away. But let me just read from his column. He says, the chronically tortured fan base is starving for it. That's how they describe Toronto fans up there. Like, you know, the chronically tortured fan base is starving for it.
I mean, I think it's accurate.
The players have been dreaming of it, but let's not kid ourselves. At this point, it's Mike Babcock who truly, truly needs it. Nobody needs the Maple Leafs to set off a civic celebration that would accompany a Game 7 victory in Boston tonight more than the 55-year-old Yorkville resident in the expensive suit standing behind the Toronto bench. This is a coach who desperately requires tangible proof he's not yesterday's man. The numbers are piling up. If the Maple Leafs don't win on Tuesday, if they don't win tonight, Babcock will have lost 8 of his past 9 playoff series.
Wow.
Okay, so we'll say, you know, if Cassidy loses tonight, he will have lost 3 of his 4. If Babcock loses tonight, he will have lost 8 of his past 9. He will have lost 5 of his last 6 Game 7s. 5 of his last 6 Game 7s. And his lifetime record in 7th games will sink to a dismal 3-7.
Yeesh. Wow.
You look at those numbers, and if you're one of the ruthless capitalists whose company is paying Babcock an average annual salary of $6.25 million U.S., you wonder, where's the value added? So this writer, this is, you know, remember Beers and Surratt say that the Toronto media is actually soft on the Leafs?
Yes.
This is Canadian Shaughnessy.
This is Canadian Shaughnessy.
Hey.
I mean, he goes, he's already got him losing the game. So, you know, the Reshook here has compiled all the numbers as if he's already lost. You know, which is a great trick. Right. He's not lost 7 of 8 playoff series. It's now 8 of 9 if he loses tonight. And it's not 4 or 5 past game sevens. It's now 5 of 6 as if he's already lost. That's a neat little trick, Murray, of how you up the numbers.
Yeah. Which is exactly what Shaughnessy would do.
Exactly.
That guy's probably working on a book, The Curse of Borges Salming.
And then this Reshook goes right to his salary and the people that own the team. And if you own the team, you're saying, why are we paying this guy all this money to lose 8 of his last 9 playoff series? So they're all over him. Reshook continues. Babcock goes to bat for Babcock nearly daily in his media briefings, pointing out roster flaws and player shortcomings. But here's what has become clear through 6 games and what Babcock doesn't say. He's coaching the better team. He's got the superior goaltender. Toronto's forward lines are deeper and faster than the ones at the disposal of Boston coach Bruce Cassidy. If the Bruins have an edge on the back end, Morgan Rielly has been the best blue liner in the series. And the Maple Leafs have been in command of the proceedings 3 times, up 1-0, 2-1, and 3-2. So it's interesting that, and I agree, I think Babcock's got the better team. Or certainly in this matchup, they just match up better. They write that as Game 7 approached, Babcock has left close observers with plenty of questions about his ability to match wits. Why, hockey people were still asking on Monday, did he pull Frederik Andersen in Game 6 with the Maple Leafs down a goal, but yet to establish deep offensive zone pressure? Let me stop there. A lot of people think they pulled Andersen too early in that game. Do you agree?
So the time of game didn't bother me, but I think the point is fair about not necessarily having the puck yet.
Yeah, the whole trend of the league is to pull these guys quicker than they ever have.
Right, but it is one thing to pull them early and another one to pull them when you're just dumping the puck in and you don't really have possession yet. So I think the second thing is a fair criticism. It didn't feel to me like they were quite ready to do that, and it burned them. But you know, that's a little bit of a nitpick.
I didn't think twice about it.
But yeah, that's why I say it's a little bit of a nitpick, because it's, you know, you're giving up empty net goals. It means you're down going into that point, right? You're desperate anyway, but keep going.
Okay, so the second guessing continues. Why does he keep rolling out Patrick Marleau despite Marleau's invisibility? Why does he still insist on rushing his top power play unit off the ice so the likes of Tyler Ennis and Marleau can get their turn? I'll just stop right there. That used to drive me nuts about Claude. You know, a minute for the top unit, a minute for PP1, and a minute for PP2. As opposed to, would you just let the top guys out there and play them a minute and a half or a minute 45 or even all two, if that's what it takes? What are you worried about, you know, getting that second power play time? I guess Babcock does the same thing. That would frustrate me, too. Anyway, the second guessing continues. Why won't Babcock occasionally load up a line with, oh, I don't know, his top three players, if only to blindside Cassidy with the element of surprise? Like put Matthews up with Marner and Tavares? Like, why not try that? Why does he seem to consider mind-numbing predictability a strategic virtue? He's all over him. Now listen to this on the penalty kill. And maybe at the top of the list, why does Babcock refuse to address the chronic problems on Toronto's specialty teams? The power play, Toronto's power play, is going out with a relative whimper, scoring in just 2 of 6 playoff games and making good on just 1 of its past 7 attempts. And as for the penalty kill, listen to this. According to NHL.com, going back to 1985-86, I don't know why he drew the line there, probably to help his argument, but that's what you do. Going back to 85-86, there have been 424 teams whose playoff runs lasted at least 6 games. Toronto's 2019 penalty kill percentage, their penalty kill percentage on this team this playoff year.
Gotcha.
Is right now at an embarrassing 56%. Guess where that ranks out of the 424 teams to play at least 6 playoff games?
I'm guessing 423.
423rd, yeah.
423rd.
He wouldn't have used it if it didn't help his arguments, like you said.
So. Yeah, so, and honestly, having been on that site, I think he draws the line there because that's as far back as their database goes.
Is that right?
I think. I'll double check it, but they do have some sort of disclaimer there that says since, and I think it's 85, 86.
Again, according to NHL.com, going back to 85-86, there have been 424 teams whose playoff runs have lasted at least 6 games. Toronto's penalty kill this playoff season, an embarrassing 56%, ranks 423rd out of 424. It was no better last year. The Leafs' 2018 penalty kill ranks 421.
Wow.
Their 2017 penalty kill ranks 407.
Wow, that's horrendous.
He writes, those numbers are Babcock's numbers. The last 3 years, out of 424 teams, the penalty kill in the power play for the Leafs has ranked 407, 421, and 423 out of 424.
Wow, that's horrendous. And 2 of those series were against the Bruins, who will never be confused with the Canadiens of the 70s. So, although their power play now is pretty good.
So Reshuk writes, the penalty kill is historically brutal. And sure, some of it comes down to bad luck and bad bounces, but some of it's been predictable too, he says. For example, Zach Hyman, a heart and soul grinder who appears to be nursing an injury, has lost 76% of the draws he's taken on the kill, most of which have come against the great Patrice Bergeron. Hyman is 5-for-21 on the dot shorthanded, and while he's been getting eviscerated, the Bruins have scored a remarkable 7 power play goals.
So he's been on the ice for all 7?
Apparently that's how I read that.
Wow.
And faced with those facts, a lot of coaches would make an adjustment by, say, maybe tapping the more accomplished John Tavares to take some of those faceoffs. But don't expect it here from Babcock. On Monday, Babcock was asked if he'll consider taking a different approach to his game plan in Game 7. Quote, nope, 100% the opposite of that piece of advice, he said.
So he's stubborn.
In other words, writes Reshuk, he'd rather lose doing things his way than win doing them somebody else's. He'd rather lose doing things his way than win doing them somebody. I don't know if that makes sense, but he'd rather just do it his way and lose than do it some way else's and win. He's happy being a winner, sure, but you can get the idea there's nothing more important to him than being right. Looking at Babcock's recent playoff win-loss record suggests he's either often wrong or totally due. A fan base that hasn't honked a horn in a series-winning joy in 15 years can only hope he's the latter. So, big stakes for Mike Babcock. So, if he loses, he might lose his job. That ain't going to happen to Cassidy.
So, I've always wondered with Babcock, and look, I understand the reputation. Didn't he win just one cup with Detroit?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so, like, I don't know. I sometimes I wonder whether there's more hype there than reality, and I'm not telling you he's a sucky coach. Because he clearly has a good reputation and has coached some good teams. But, man, those penalty-killing numbers, the only question I would ask is, did Kadri penalty kill for him? Like,
he'd penalty kill for me. I'm sure he must. He must. I mean, he's that kind of guy.
So I'm wondering, you know, last year in the playoffs, they didn't have him for, what, 3 games? Now they don't have him for 5 games?
So
I wonder.
If Babcock loses tonight, he will have lost 8 of his past 9 playoff series. He will have lost 5 of his past 6 game sevens. His lifetime record in 7th games will sink to 3-7. Since 1985-86, there have been 424 teams who've played at least 6 playoff games. The last 3 years, the Leafs' penalty kill among those 424 ranks 423, 421, and 407.
I mean, that's unbelievable.
Okay, so those are some pretty serious numbers for Mike Babcock. So, those are the stakes on that side of it. And speaking of the Toronto side of it, let's get a Toronto writer in here. We're going to talk to someone from the Great White North coming up next. Felger Maz here from the Garden.
Stay tuned for more Bruins Game Day with Felger Maz from the Star Market Broadcast Studio on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Center of the hockey universe. This is Bruins Game Day, live from the Star Market Broadcast Studio on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
When I was walking around Yorkville, like I hear from people how it would be, they were great to me last night. Let's go get them in Boston. Everybody, our team, including our fans, wanted to win yesterday. But our fans, I mean, I live in the city, walk around, they're pretty pumped up. And they want us to be successful, and we want to be successful for them. The game's going to be played on the ice. We have to execute.
That's Mike Babcock yesterday talking about Game 7 and the excitement in Toronto heading into tonight's game. And speaking of Toronto, let's get a Toronto voice on. Terry Koshan covers the Leafs, has the entire millennium, frankly, since 2000, from what I understand, with the Toronto Sun. He joins us now at our Star Market broadcast studios at the TD Garden. Terry, thanks for coming by. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
So you were here in 2013, you said, 2000, you know, last year, obviously.
Yeah, we were here for both of them. And, I remember looking at my colleague, Rob Longley, who covers the Jays now, in 2013, and the Leafs took the 4-1 lead in the third. I said, Rob, easiest gamer you ever write. And we all know what happened. It became hell. For all of us on deadline.
So you were here at both of them. I'm surprised they let you come back.
Well, you know what? There's a bunch of us on the beat who were here for the first two, and I don't know that we want to make it a perfect triumvirate tonight, but we'll see.
So what's the feeling up there? Is there a feeling of dread? Like, here we go again, you know, sort of just that one loss compiling on the next and that pressure building, or does this year feel different?
Well, I think publicly there is a bit of that. It's not like that in the dressing room at all. And 2013, I think, for the Leafs and for us in the media, is irrelevant. The Leafs, nothing to do with them now and that sort of thing. Last year, of course, you know, a slew of these guys were in that game. We all know what happened to Jake Gardner, the -5, that sort of thing, and so many others part of it. But I really get the sense that instead of using it, the Leafs themselves, using it as an intimidating factor, it's more of a motivation thing where we don't want to, we know what it was like at the end of that night in Game 7. We have no desire to feel that again in our lives starting tonight against the Bruins. So I think that's more of a motivation for them. The fan base, I think there are a little more nerves involved, but the Leafs are coached by a man who is confident at all times, and I think that's bled into the dressing room quite a bit this season.
Who's the better team, do you think?
The better team right now? It's hard to say. If you're asking me in another way who wins tonight and maybe why, I would say the Bruins do, Because as much as we talk about experience with the Leafs, what I look at is the Bruins have that core of people who won the Stanley Cup together. The Leafs are excited because last year they added Ron Hainsey, who won a cup with Pittsburgh. This year that they added Jake Muzzin because they won the Stanley Cup with the he won the cup of the LA Kings in 2014. The Bruins did it together, and I think that you know in a one game 60-minute sprint, which is what it's going to be tonight, that might put them in a better stead by the end of the night. I think that this series has been a lot more even than a lot of us thought it was going to be going into it. The two questions nagged in Toronto going into did the Leafs have the intensity, the physical nature in their game to last with these guys? And really, that was the biggest question. That was the biggest one. I think they have. We wouldn't be talking here prior to Game 7 and a few hours before if they hadn't, but... I just think it's two even clubs. I think the Leafs are a little bit quicker. I think they're a little bit deeper, but the Bruins have that experience, and I don't know how you can equal that without having had it first.
See, I personally think the experiencing gets a little overrated, and and not just in this sport, in every sport.
Right.
But that said, like, if you look at the Toronto roster, who scares you the most in this game?
The Austin Matthews does.
No,
well,
who do you look at and say, ooh, that guy's shaky?
On the Bruins side?
No, on the Toronto side. In other words, if you were to say to me, look at the Bruins, I say, I'm worried about Rask.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, well, in that way, I don't know if you can get to it too specifically. I just think from a team standpoint, the Bruins have that. I know that, you know, I can say that, but then you could say to me, well, then why didn't the Bruins have it in game five here on home ice? The Leafs walked out with a victory to take the series lead back home. Where was it then? That would be a legitimate point, but I just think when it comes down to it and one team is going home tonight, the other team is advancing, the Bruins have that. And, you know, even the Game 7 thing last year, and we get back to that, well, the Bruins came out of that with the victory. That alone should spur a lot of those guys on who don't have the cup experience to know what it was like to win that in that type of atmosphere at home. So it might amount to nothing. It might really come down to who has more penalties and who scores on the power play, and that's it. Experience has nothing to do with it. But I just think it's going to be a hell of a game either way.
Let me put it another way. Who are Leafs fans ready to choke if they lose this tonight? Like Patrick Marleau, to me, I look at it, you know, stat-wise, he's done nothing in these six games.
He's done nothing for much of the season, and that's a real conundrum for the Leafs, given his contract status next year. He has 1 year to go at 6.25, I believe, and... that would be one source of the frustration, I think. But I think that if you're a Leaf fan and the Maple Leafs lose tonight, you have to be buoyed by what their good young players have done. Marner had the good start to this series, and Austin Matthews has just really taken over from a Leaf standpoint, and there's got to be a lot of optimism with that. But I think, listen, the fan base thinks one way. I think the fan or the media thinks another. We cover this team. It'd be a little bit nitpicking. I think you have to get to the fact at some point you're going to lose to a better hockey team on a given night. And that's what could happen here tonight, but we'd also be talking about a Leafs win to go on and play Columbus too.
Terry Koshan, he covers the Leafs with the Toronto Sun, joining us here at the Garden. What's the key to the game tonight?
I think I mentioned it, special teams. The Leafs, for whatever reason, the Bruins 7-for-16 on the power play. You know, we saw the Leafs in here in Game 5 kill all three, and I think structurally they were just better that game. You know, your goalie is always your best penalty killer. They come back up to Toronto two nights ago. They score right off the hop on the faceoff and a bit of a backdoor play on the goal by Torrey Krug on the second power play. That was it for the Leafs. But it's what they say going into it that I think determines this a lot. You've got your goaltending, you have your special teams. Well, if the Bruins aren't 7-for-16 in the series, they're more of a 2-for-3, 2 or 3-for-16, like you'd see a little normally across the board, we may not be sitting here right now talking about a Game 7. So if that's been a factor so far, it'll be a factor tonight. A, whether the Bruins are successful on them. B, if they're not, then the Leafs can kill them off. The Leafs, I think, have been better, not for the most part, but a good stretch of 5-and-5 play.
We were just reading from another paper up there, their Babcock's rankings on the penalty kill in the playoffs. 423rd out of 424 teams since 1985-86 on the PK.
I don't know what it is, guys. It's because in the regular season, those numbers don't exist for Babcock coach teams. And I think a lot of it, when you get down to, and I can't speak to what happened in Detroit. I think I covered one of their playoff series one of the years, the Leafs were in 2015 against Tampa, but that's neither here nor there. In Toronto, circumstantial things. They liked two nights ago, again, just one, it's one small sample size, but structurally, some of the things they had managed to do against the Bruins, a boom, the puck was in the net. I mean, let's face it, the goal that Brad Marchand scores
was not a power play goal.
Well, no, and it's really, it goes in off Ron Hainsey's leg, otherwise it's 3 feet wide, so there is a little bit of luck involved there. I'm not taking anything away from Bergeron winning the draw, whatever, but a lot of it comes down to circumstantial, I think, and it's just, I don't know, but those numbers are It's bizarre. It's
421 last year, 407 the year before.
Yeah. Oh, the Bruins have torched him. Yeah. And my question to you is Babcock's job in jeopardy? How do people feel about that?
I think from a lot of Leaf Nation it would be, but I would have had a better idea buying that if the Leafs came into this series and didn't have the physical play that they've had and were taken out by the Bruins in 4 or 5 where they were clearly dominated. When you get down to a game 7 now, I think that's awfully unfair for a coach that has really brought this team as far as he has from last place three or four seasons ago to where they are now. Back-to-back 100-point seasons, you're not losing to a team tonight that was worse than you. You're losing to a team that is a hell of a good hockey team top to bottom. They're well coached by Bruce Cassidy, and hard for it would be to Leaf Nation to accept it. There's no shame in that. I could sell these things to general manager Kyle Dubas feel differently. We don't know. We'd find out next few days. But personally, I'd be surprised if Mike Babcock is not back next year.
Okay, final question. How do you view your goalie up there? I think he's been the MVP of the series. I think Anderson's been better than Rask. Yet when I look at Frederik Andersen's career in Game 7s, he's 0-3 with a .451 goals against and a save percentage of .840, which is obviously wretched. Are people up there, you know, is that in the past? And are you all confident in Frederik Andersen or what?
It's in the past. This year he's been their backbone. When players come out and say he's been our MVP, there's no kidding. John Tavares had a career year. Mitch Marner had a career year. Morgan Riley had a career year. Auston Matthews would have. He wasn't hurt. Their best player has been their goaltender. I think he's been great in this series. None of the losses that the Maple Leafs have had in the 3 losses, you can pin on Frederik Andersen. Those stats, again, you know, in the past, we'll see. I mean, Frederik Andersen, like a lot of these young Maple Leafs, he's not a young guy, but he's growing mentally. He's matured. And I don't think that those things will have any bearing on his performance tonight.
Okay, again, Terry Koch, Toronto's son, you cover the Leafs, but if you were betting, you like the Bruins tonight.
I would think so, yeah, just because the home ice is going to count for something. And it's been a bizarre series. I mean, we haven't seen one of these one win, one loss, and the momentum in this sort of thing. And, you know, if you follow the pattern, you say the Leafs win tonight because the Bruins went up in Toronto, but I don't necessarily buy that. I just think that this this fan base here, we talk about in Toronto, they're going to get that. The Bruins are going to get the support tonight. It was a weird start to the series, wasn't it? In game 1, it was so flat in this building, and none of us could really believe it. The Leafs just kind of came in and said, okay, hey, we're going to take this win, and they did. Well, it's been different in the ensuing games here, and that would be an advantage, but who knows? I mean, it's going to come down, like I said, goaltending, special teams, and I don't know, maybe Auston Matthews goes one more level tonight and torches the Bruins for a couple, and they move on. A lot can happen tonight, and that's why it's going to be so exciting.
Yeah, let me know what kind of support the Bruins get if they fall behind 2-0.
Terry, thanks so much for coming down. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
See you,
all right,
Terry.
Here comes an update from Murray. We have Jack Edwards standing by later on in the hour. We'll take your phone calls next, right after the...
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Broadcasting live from the Star Market Broadcast Studio, it's Felger and Mads. Bruins Game Day on your home of the Bees, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The players in the room will have a much bigger voice in terms of what your demeanor needs to be. As coaches, we've tried to prepare them for situational things that are going to happen on the ice. What they did well in Game 6 that we could try to correct, and what we did well that we want to keep building on. Once they get on the ice, I believe the leadership group will have our guys in a good place. So I don't want to over-message other than, you know, listen, you got to enjoy the moment and you got to play and you're going to make a mistake and you got to put it behind you and you got to keep playing and you have to have more will than the guy across from you. Pretty much is the message we give them.
That's Cassidy. You like that comment, Mess?
I do. I just think it's smart for him to not delve into the "let me tell you guys how to prepare for Game 7," because he's never won a cup, right? I think that's one of those where, no, you know what? We have good veteran leadership on this team. We have guys that have played in Game 7s and won championships, so I'm going to let them handle that. I'm going to tell you guys tactically what we need to do to beat this team, because here's what they're good at and here's what they're not. But in terms of how to get ready for this game and how to play played emotionally and in terms of what chances to take and those things, you guys talk to your veteran players because they've done it. It's a smart way to delegate that leadership.
Okay, let's zip through some of your calls here before Jack Edwards joins us in studio. Nick in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Nick.
Hey, Mike, thanks for taking my call. A couple quick things for you. So while you were talking about Babcock, I mean, I think if they lose this game tonight, I think he's canned because, I mean, there's only so long you can wait around for a swan song from this guy, even though he's only won one. I mean, Quenneville and the Blackhawks, they got rid of him because of the same reason. But what I wanted to get into is pace of play. I think it's really easy for us to harp on Rask and have that be the story and say, will Rask crap himself? I think if the Bruins let the Leafs open this game up and it gets too fast for them, I think that's going to be the downfall. And you could see them losing by two games on home ice tonight.
Okay, losing by two games? I don't get what you mean.
Maybe
by
he meant by two goals.
By two goals.
My guess is what he meant to say.
To me, it's puck possession. I think there's been games and portions of games where Toronto's, I keep saying this, has skated circles around you. You can't get the puck. And it's like people complain about the Bruins' effort and their engagement and their intensity. And I've looked at some of those spots and said, no, they're plenty intense. They can't catch Toronto. They're zipping around them, and they're too fast for them. And I think that was totally the case in Game 5 here in Boston. Now, there was about a period and a half in Game 6 in Toronto where the Bruins really felt like they sort of got it in low and was sort of grinding on Toronto. If that's how the game's played, it's Boston's favorite. It's the other thing. You're hanging on for dear life.
Yeah, you got to force. You know, you got to force them to. You've got to control the pace, right? You've got to control the tempo. I'm a big believer in that in every sport. Really, I am. And Game 5 to me was maddening. I told you, it felt like that Winter Classic against Montreal, where the Canadiens had the puck the whole time.
Rick in Smithfield, what do you got for us?
Hey, how are you? So the thing about the ice, if that's not going to be a factor, but if it is, as long as the fast came down, so it would be in Bruins' favor. But more importantly, as well as Krejci has been playing, he needs to win a face-off against Matthews. He is getting manhandled in the face-off circle, especially in the offensive zone, right when we just had a big flurry and we were just on the big high, and then we have an offensive zone face-off, and he just chokes against them. That needs to he needs to kick it up there.
Okay, do we have a way to look up those numbers, Krejci versus Matthews on the dot?
I don't know if I can get you the specific matchup. I can get you the individual player totals.
I'll tell you, across the board, the Leafs have done well on the power play. I don't know if Bergeron's underwater or not. He was underwater in a couple games, which is, you know, that's one of the best faceoff guys in the league. So if Tavares is winning any of these games on the dot, that's a win for Toronto. And Krejci's always been okay on the faceoff circle, not great, functional. That's been a factor in this series.
Bergeron in the last two or three games has been a lot better.
Much better.
He's at 62% for the series now.
Okay, wow. So he's back up there.
Yeah, he's way up there now. Again, at the last couple of games in particular, what was he last game, like 73% or something?
So the ice, you're right. It should favor the Bruins. A choppy ice, dump it in, grind it out, hack and whack and play that game. And Toronto's a more speed-skilled team, so bad ice should favor you, not them.
But it's been bad, and they were good here Friday night.
Because you're trying to dipsy-do, because you're trying right. You're getting too finesse, and that's even more motivation to just simplify the game. The simpler game is better for the Bruins than Toronto. So hopefully that bad ice forces them into that, or they just get smart with that.
I can't get the head-to-head numbers, but both Krejci and Matthews are exactly 50% for the series.
Is that right?
Krejci's 37-37, and Matthews is 45-45.
See, that's what I think Krejci is. I think he's a dead 49%, 50% guy. And I don't know what his career numbers are. He just feels to me like that's what he is. Ken in the car, what do you got for us?
Hey, what's up, guys? So I'm just kind of tired of hearing people crapping on our ass. I know he's kind of a poopy pants, but the worst thing is everyone with the Tim Thomas stuff. Yeah, Tim Thomas would have shaved that. But no, get over it. 2011 is done. It's over. Tim Thomas will never be – you'll never get that again out of a goalie. It's over. That's it. So everyone's
– I agree with that. I think Tim Thomas's performance may have ruined you in terms of your expectations for a playoff goalie. I mean, hell, Moog and Lemelin and guys like that never did that. I mean, you have to go to Ken Dryden or, you know, like, I mean, that was the kind of performance he had that year.
If I remember right, he set a record at the time. Wasn't it save percentage like .938?
I can't remember.
But it was something ridiculous.
It wasn't normal. That's not what that's, you know, you don't need to be that. Most goalies win cups playing something less than that. Okay. Not everyone's Tim Thomas. that year. Tim Thomas was never Tim Thomas. He never duplicated that before or since.
But the criticism of Rask in big games is deserved. You went over those numbers earlier. And as good as he's been in this series, he's kind of in a no-win situation in this series because, okay, he's been really, really good, especially the last three games. But if he craps his pants tonight, everyone's going to look at him and say, eh, that's what we expected.
Ah, well, good timing then, because a charter member, perhaps the presiding sitting president of the Boo-Hoo Tuca crew, is now standing by. In fact, this individual is such a Rask defender. He went onto foreign soil, Mass. This individual went onto foreign soil and besmirched us.
Does Canada really count as foreign soil?
It does. And besmirched us to the good people of Canada. Jack Edwards of Nesson joins us next. Don't go anywhere.
Stay tuned for more Bruins Game Day from the Star Market Broadcast Studio on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hey, it's
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
From the center of the hockey universe, Felger and Mass, this is Bruins Game Day. Live from the Star Market Broadcast Studio on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Marchand to Bergeron, the drive save, rebound is loose, Sagan kicks it loose, Bergeron scores!
That's what it sounded like 6 years ago this week, tonight-ish, right around here. 6 years ago tonight, the call there was from someone who used to come on our show all the time. Used to like us, I think, Maz. Used to
I still like you.
Have a good rapport with. We haven't heard from Jack Edwards in forever. He's going to join us now from our Star Market studios here at the Garden. How you doing, Jack?
I'm doing great, Mike. How are you?
I don't like me, Jack. How could you like us? Well, my goodness.
I thought about this coming in, and it's like, wow, I'm going to be the good guy here because everybody's mad at you guys all the time.
Yes,
right.
Exactly. So, and Murray, don't leave Murray out.
Yeah,
nobody likes
him. I just met him, so I don't even have the chance to dislike him yet.
Yeah. All right. Well, so let's get to some of the nitty gritty. Nesson will have the call tonight. So no matter what your guide says, the game will be on Nesson tonight.
Thank you.
It is shared with NBC, the NBC Sports Network as well.
Yep.
The key to the game tonight, Jack.
Neutral zone. If the Bruins keep going north and south and they keep Toronto from accelerating through the neutral zone, I think they'll have their way with them. You know, it's going to be a close game. It's going to be a nail-biter, heart attack game, game seven. But I think the key to the series, as Brick has been pointing out, is how the teams are able to dominate for periods the neutral zone. The other thing that I've been thinking about all day long is the response to the surges, because the best thing for me, the most compelling thing about playoff hockey is how one team races its game, and then can the other team match or surpass that? And you have that thrust against thrust that you can actually feel in the building. And after the team that scores first tonight, the response is going to be really important, because if the Bruins score first, this whole place is going to be shaking. If Toronto scores first and the Bruins don't immediately respond, that's going to be a big help for Toronto's self-confidence, which, frankly, has to be lower than the Bruins going into this situation, because none of those guys, with the exception of Jake Muzzin, has ever experienced what so many of the Bruins' core leaders have.
What does experience mean tonight, Jack?
I think it means a lot in adverse moments. When Bergeron or Chara can look down the bench and say, let's go, boys. It's going to be okay. Just keep with the system. Trust yourselves. Just play. Just go play.
Do you think it's building on Toronto? Like it may have built for the Red Sox for years? I mean, Toronto's that kind of equivalent that we always use. passionate fan base. That team is hugely important to them up there, but they can't win. And it's sort of like this self-fulfilling loser thing that builds on itself. Do you think that exists up there and that works against the Leafs?
I think right now the Toronto environment reminds me of the pre-Schilling Red Sox. And the psychodrama of every winter in Toronto is parallel to the psychodrama of what summers used to be in Boston. It's not when will they blow it, it's how will they blow it. And that mentality still exists. And, you know, Sarah Davis, who's all dear to all our hearts and has moved back to Toronto, we're in touch all the time with different members of our broadcast team. And she says that people still have that mentality of like, oh, no, we're going to walk off the edge of the cliff again in Game 7 tonight. But eventually, Toronto's going to win one of these games, and we'll have a rivalry then.
I mean, I even think the Bruins had it up until 2011.
Oh, yeah.
They had a lot of that, too.
The Game 7 thing, right?
Totally right. How do you look at the goalies so far in this series?
Jack, can I ask rephrase?
Yeah.
Who gets a check mark right now? Come on, let's see.
Who gets a check mark tonight?
No. So through six games, who's been the better goalie? Who gets a check mark?
I think it's a draw.
I
don't think either goalie has been the difference in a game.
You don't think Frederik Anderson's been better?
I think he's let in fewer soft goals, but I think that the reason the Bruins have lost the three games that they've lost is because they've failed to do the things that they're supposed to do. The forwards haven't kept the gaps tight.
Agreed. Different question.
Yeah, but
I mean, I'm not blaming Rask for any loss. So I'm just saying who's been better.
So the way you say it, fewer soft goals, I have a hard time remembering any soft goals that Anderson has really allowed. So, you know, I think Anderson has been a more reliable goaltender. I don't care what the numbers are. I look at Anderson, he's played better.
Game six could have been 6-1. I mean, he made some ridiculous saves in the first period. I mean, that one on Bergeron, the changeup, Bergeron didn't intend it to be a changeup, but it ended up being a changeup, which sometimes you see great goalies just whiff on a glove side save. And, he made the adjustment. He's been really, really good. But if you put it into perspective, I can't remember the number, but Anderson went like the first 13 decisions or something sick like that in his career without a regulation loss to the Bruins between his time in Anaheim and the start of his time in Toronto. And that shine is off of him. You know, Braden Holtby is the only guy who has any mystique about him for the Bruins anymore.
But you think going in tonight, if you're handicapping it, the goaltending is a wash or advantage?
I don't see a difference. I don't see a substantial difference between the two guys. Bruce Cassidy has pointed out that if the Bruins retrieve rebounds, they're going to get to Anderson. And when they have done that, that has been the case. And Anderson hasn't looked impenetrable.
Okay.
Do you look at any guys on either side in this game? You said the neutral zones are key to this game, and something Brick has pointed out. What about personnel-wise? Do you look at personnel on either side particularly and say, you know what, watch out for that guy tonight. Watch out on this side and on the other side, someone else.
Yeah, and I'm going to go kind of off the chart with Boston. I think Sean Corrali has been an instant difference maker, and Charlie Coyle's play continues to get better game in, game out. The guy that I'm really wondering about with Toronto is Mitch Marner, because ever since he blocked those two Pasternak shots, he's been really quiet. And I'm wondering if there's something going on physically. I watched him carefully at the morning skate. He seemed to be moving okay, but who knows? Maybe it's just full of, you know, Novocaine or Procaine or something that they numb it with, because he was such a force in the first couple of games of this series, and he's kind of gone a little quiet.
We got to get Murray into his medicine cabinet. Murray will take care of Mitch Marner.
Jack Edwards of Nesson joining us here on Felger and Mavs from the Garden. Same thing, not quite as dramatic, but with Bergeron, you wonder if there's something physically with some of those minute totals, Jack. You know,
yeah.
Was it 14 minutes a couple of games ago?
14 and a half.
You almost never see that.
Yeah, and I wonder if he had a bug or something. He seems to be getting better. He's been sensational at the faceoff dot the whole series. It's a really bloated percentage. He's up near 70%, I think, on faceoffs overall, and on the power play he's been super dominant. Like, he's like 72-73% on the power play, which is all important, especially when the Bruins were going through that funk that they seem to have emerged from on the power play. You know, possession is is what it's all about these days.
Jack, I was talking about the stakes earlier with this Bruins team. I think when you talk about pressure and stakes, I think there's more pressure on Toronto just given their market and the weight of the country and all that stuff. But in terms of stakes, I think there's more at stake for the Bruins because their window's a little closer to the end. Toronto's just starting their run, right? All their good players in their young 20s. And whether it's Babcock or whatever, it's really all in front of them. The Bruins, when's the next time? If they win tonight, they'll be the highest remaining seed in the league.
Right.
The road to the cup, quote-unquote, goes through Boston. They'll have home ice in every series the rest of the way, including the Stanley Cup Finals, if you know if that happens. When's the last time Chara and Bergeron and Krejci and Rask and that group is going to be in that position? I think the stakes for the Bruins tonight are huge.
Yeah, and the key guy is Krejci. And how many years can you count on going forward like this one from David Krejci? I think the number is probably zero that you can count on because he would have played 82 games if we're up to him. And Cassidy said, you're going to rest. So, yeah, I'll do that. But for him to be that durable in a season full of key injuries, for him to be that magical with a complete musical chairs game going on either wing throughout the season, I don't know if you're going to see that from that guy in his prime anymore. And, you know, I hope it goes on for two or three years, but you can't count on it. And I think that is why Don Sweeney made the moves that he made at the deadline, not to give away a first-round draft choice, but you know they're still hoping to get more out of Johansson, who hasn't come close to what he's capable of presenting to the team. But I think Coyle was an excellent acquisition. It has stabilized the third line, which has only been a problem for, what, 2.5 years.
So just quickly on Johansson, since he brought him up, if you happen to see him before the game, tell him that on the power play to try to stuff the puck in the net. If they're going to let him sit there right next to the goal mouth and cover Bergeron, he can try to jam the sucker in there and get a rebound or something.
Yeah,
it drove me bananas in the last game.
Yeah, Milbury made a great point in game six. They showed a replay, and you got to take the goalie's eyes away, and then you got to get in his face for the rebound. Yeah.
I mean, unbelievable.
He knows that.
Jack, in closing, do I even need to ask who wins tonight?
I think the Bruins in a heart attack. You know, might be overtime. Yeah, Toronto's a really, really good team, almost a great team. If they win tonight and they win another round, they qualify to be considered as a great team. They are the enemy on the build, and eventually they're going to do it. But I think tonight the Bruins hold them off.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.